All right, welcome to the podcast today. I'm sitting here with Grace Anderson, and I'm excited to dive into her family with you. She has so much on her family tree on Family Search. She descends from a lot of Mormon pioneers, so there's a lot of information there. So I'm excited to share some of that with her today. But first, Grace, can you just introduce yourself and let us know who you are and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Grace. My passion job is that I am an Instagram influencer. I run a food blog and I love to share recipes that are simple and quick. As a newlywed, I have had a hard time figuring out how to love cooking, and figuring that out, I want to share that because that's something hard. And then my day job is that my mom and I have opened a foot zoning school together. And so we're all into the holistic in that realm. And my dad's a doctor, so we're loving to marry modern medicine, more ancient holistic practices. And so I do all the graphic design, web design, some of the marketing, all the technical stuff is me. So I love being able to do that. And I'm excited to hear what you have to share about my family.
Oh, cool. Well, that sounds very cool. I've seen your mom's account on Instagram, and the stuff that she shares is really powerful stuff. So, all right, well, let's just get started. Before we dive into your family tree, though, I want to hear what your family's like, did you grow up close to your cousins, aunts and uncles, grandparents? Do you even know your great grandparents? Like, what was that like for you?
Yeah. So I absolutely love and adore my family. I am the oldest of six siblings, so there's a lot of us. And in my mom's family, there was a 10-year gap and then two cabooses at the end. So my aunt and uncle are 4 and 5 years older than me. And I grew up with them pretty much. And so it's kind of just like a continuing family we always joke about. And my youngest sister is just about to turn 4. And so when I have babies, it's going to be the same way, just a continuing line. And so growing up, all my aunts and uncles, my mom and dad are both the oldest. So as I was little, they all still lived at home. And so I was kind of just like the new baby sister. And so once they started to all get married, most of them stayed around here. I have an uncle that lived in mostly Alaska and now he's in Wyoming, but the most of us stayed super tight until just recently, like within 5 miles of each other. We were together every week, very often. My grandma also comes from a lot of siblings. She's the youngest of, I think, 7 or 8. And we call them the aunties because my grandma's from Australia. They're just proper British ladies. And so usually monthly, I'm with my great grandma or my great aunts. And then my great grandma passed away a couple years ago. But because my grandma was the youngest, we often got her for holidays and for all occasions. And so she has a very tender place in my heart because she was like an extra grandma, not a great grandma. And so growing up, just be so close to her. And then my grandpa's parents, I was very close with too. They passed away a little bit ago when I was more younger, but my great grandpa, as I was growing up, he was my favorite. And so I just have a super sweet, tender connection with that side of the family. And with my dad's side of the family, they all went different places for schooling. And so they didn't live as close to us. And grandpa owns a travel company and does church history trips all over the world. And so he was always gone. And so we tried to soak up the time we have with them when we're with them. And now they've all kind of moved a little bit closer. So as I've gotten older, I've gotten to be closer with them. And with them, I don't know. We lived in my great grandma's house, my grandma's mom. Mm-hmm. And so growing up, I knew her better. By the time I was born, she was kind of heavy into dementia, though. And so I didn't get to know who she really was. And my grandpa's mom passed away pretty quick. And then I don't know either of my great grandpas. The only great grandpa I actually ever knew growing up and was alive at the same time as me was my mom's grandpa. Okay. On that. And so super close with one side, the other side's a little bit more scattered, but I love them both equally. So it's fun to be around family more now that I'm grown up too. I really enjoy that.
Oh, cool. Well, it sounds like you have a lot of family and a lot of connections there. And I'm like, there was so much information about your family on Family Search that I only did like one little branch. So there is a lot that you can learn on there about the rest of your family. So, but we'll share a few generations on your McKay side is who we're going to talk about today. And so let me just share the screen here as I'm talking here. If you want to see these videos, you need to go to YouTube to watch it. And you can see what I'm sharing with Grace here today. All right. So this is the home of your fourth great-grandparents, William and Ellen McKay. So this is back in Scotland. This is their home. It was still standing up until like the late, I don't know, at least by the late 1970s, but then by 2015, there's just like a few walls still standing. So this is in the corner, there's a little picture of them, William and Ellen. And William, he was a cattle dealer. And he would often visit so I guess they lived in a little town and there was like a church, a school, and an ale house. And after he would earn some money, he would go to the ale house, drink some alcohol, and his wife would send their 5-year-old son to the ale house to go collect his father and bring him home before he spent all his money. And that 5-year-old son was your third great grandfather, Isaac. So it's kind of, I thought that was interesting that they'd send their 5-year-old to the ale house or the bar pretty much to go collect his father. But then soon after that time, they were baptized by the LDS missionaries. So from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saint missionaries, they taught the William McKay family. Their friends and family did not approve, but they were baptized in 1850. And William never went to the ale house again because drinking alcohol is something that is not allowed in the LDS church. That is a commandment that we follow. So he never visited the ale house again and never missed it. So a story that was shared on Family Search, all this information has already been researched by your family, by your grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins. I'm sure there's so much information there. But in this history of William and Ellen McKay, it talks about when they were converted, Ellen gave a Book of Mormon to her sister and like begged for her to read it, only to find out that she burned it and never read it. And that really was hard for your fourth great grandmother for her family to really not approve and to even almost, you know, not accept them for being baptized into this church. So as after they were baptized, they decided they would join the saints in Utah. And William, he had an employer and he, to save money, he's like, he told his employer just to keep most of his earnings and then send the money to them once they came to America, just to keep it safe. They didn't have to take it with them on the ship. But when they arrived in America, which this picture is of the boarding, the passenger list. So you can see William McKay here, the top line, then Helen or Ellen McKay is his wife. Isaac was your third great grandfather. He was 16. And then the rest of their children, they're 14, 12, 7, and 5. So that was a long journey across the ocean. They left in March of 1856, and then they traveled for 6 weeks and arrived in New York City. When they arrived, they went to collect the money from, I think it was the post office is where they were able to collect it. He found out that his employer had gone bankrupt and there was no money. So how does that feel so far? Just learning that little bit about your fourth great grandparents. What are you thinking right now?
That is so hard. That was a lot of opposition they faced to get here. And that I just can't, every time I just think about the pioneers, I cannot imagine having little kids and signing up for that journey. I'm glad that I wasn't part of that generation because I don't think I could have done it. So that, pretty crazy.
Well, and that's just the start of it. So when they got to New York, they had no money. They had like 3 half pennies because they were just planning on collecting all of their money when they arrived, even on the ship, because they knew they were going to be traveling to Utah. Ellen, she started throwing stuff overboard because she's like, we can't carry all of this stuff. So then her husband stopped her and was like, well, let's just wait till we get there. Thankfully, they didn't throw out everything because they had nothing. So once they arrived in New York City, they were in a company with other saints that were traveling to Utah. So they said goodbye to them. He said, well, we got to stay here and work until we earn enough money to make the trip to Utah. So Ellen and I think she had two daughters, so 5 and 14 years old, they stayed with her in some little apartment, and the boys all went out to find work. So her husband left, her 16-year-old son Isaac left, and her 12-year-old son David left to go find work. They all found some random jobs. The daughters were able to find some work to earn, find some bread. They had some tea that they were given on the journey over that they traded for bread. So they had to just scrimp by in New York City in the mid 1800s. Like, it was not an easy time to live there. And it took them 2 years to earn that money back. Here, this is just a blank screen, but so the whole aim of the McKays was to get sufficient means together to journey to the Missouri River and start their trek. So often they were paid with things they couldn't use, so they had to do a lot of trading. And Isaac became really good at trading. He was your third great-grandfather. As long as he lived, he enjoyed trading. So at last, after 2 years, they left New York for Iowa. Once they were in Iowa, it took them a year to acquire 2 steers, 2 cows, an old ox, and 1 wagon and provisions to be able to start their trek from Iowa to Salt Lake.
That is crazy that it took so long. Like, already you think that 6 weeks to come over is such a long journey. And then to have to wait that long. Oh, man. I don't think I would have enough patience for that. That's crazy that they still kept going.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, they were stalwart people. Like, I would have given up right when you landed in New York. But so they did reach the Salt Lake Valley. When they reached Ogden, they met someone named Bishop Bunker, who had previously been on a mission in Scotland. So they must have known him from before. And he welcomed them warmly and urged them to remain in Ogden. He loaned them 100 pounds of flour, and William purchased a lot, which is now located on 28th Street and Lincoln Avenue in Ogden.
Wow.
So they drove there.
Live in this area. Like, my family still lives in the Ogden area. That's crazy. Cool.
So you can go find where that land is.
Yeah.
So they drove their covered wagon onto the lot. They put up a tent and gathered their family in prayer, and they thanked God for all of his blessings and asked his blessing upon their new spot for their new home. I just think, like, what a journey from Scotland, where they started, all the way to Ogden, Utah. Like, I'm sure that it was a relief to finally arrive and finally have land for their new home.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, man, that just is so powerful to think about how hard they had to try. Because how often do we go for something in our lives and then get discouraged and just quit? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think a lot of people that are alive today would be able to do what they did.
No, definitely. Definitely not. And as I was looking, I found this picture. I don't know if you knew that David O. McKay, who was the president of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, is relative. So his grandfather was William McKay. So this is a trip that he went on in the late, I can't even remember when, sometime in the 50s to 70s, where they are standing in front of that home. So you share a common ancestor, that William McKay, with him.
I actually grew up being taught that he was my great uncle.
Mm-hmm.
And during COVID, we would have like Zoom church with that side of the family. And everyone called him Uncle David. And mm-hmm. So I was taught he was my uncle, but he's actually like just a cousin. And so I thought, like, oh, that's so cool, I'm related to one of the prophets, but it's not as close as I was taught it was. So that we thought that just because everyone called him Uncle David. So
cool. Well, he was the uncle of someone in your family,
I'm sure.
So yeah. I thought that was really cool. Yeah. So Isaac was your third great grandfather. So he was the oldest son of William and Ellen. And once they arrived in Ogden, all of the other siblings kind of got married and settled. And Isaac, since he was the oldest, he felt like he had to make sure that all of them were settled and taken care of before he kind of started his own family. So he felt, you know, responsible for their welfare. So when he was 30 years old, he met Ellen Jesperson, who at the time was working in the home of President Brigham Young in Salt Lake City, and they were married in 1969.
We'll be right back after hearing about one of our sponsors. Are you tired of searching through endless folders and devices for your precious memories? Do you wish you could easily organize and access all of your photos and videos in one place? Look no further than MyLeo. MyLeo is the ultimate photo management software that allows you to seamlessly organize, edit, and share your photos across all your devices. With MyLeo, you can effortlessly sync your pictures across your smartphone, tablet, computer, and even your external hard drives. What sets MyLeo apart is its unique combination of powerful organization tools and intuitive user interface. Its facial recognition technology automatically tags and sorts your photos, making it easier than ever to find the pictures you're looking for. And with powerful editing tools built right in, you can touch up your photos or create stunning collages with just a few clicks. But that's not all. MyLeo also allows you to easily share your photos with friends and family, whether it's through social media, email, or even printing them out. And with built-in cloud backup, you can rest assured that your memories are always safe and secure. MyLeo is giving Know Your Ancestors listeners a 25% discount off your first year of MyLeo. So go to MyLeo.com/ancestors to take advantage of that. That's MYLIO.com/ancestors to get 25% off your first year. Try MyLeo today and experience the joy of hassle-free photo management and see how easy it can be to organize and enjoy your photos like never before. And now we're back. So Isaac and Ellen, they settled in Huntsville, where he engaged in the sheep business. So he was a sheep farmer, I guess. And so Eleanor, she had a really hard life. I wasn't even going to really talk about her, but once I read a little history about her, I'm like, oh my gosh, her life was hard, very hard. So she was the only child born to Peter and Mary Jesperson in Denmark in 1852. Her father's family was very wealthy. They owned land and it paid for everyone to do their labor for them. So any manual labor, people were hired on to do it. But their family was baptized into the LDS Church in 1861 and a few months later traveled to Utah. Eleanor, once they got to Utah, her name was actually Helena when she was born. She hated school. The other children made fun of her because of her Danish accent and speech. They called her Hel for short for Helena. And she cried so much that her parents changed her name to Eleanor. I thought that was...
That's kind of funny. My name is Helen and we call her Hella. So that's kind of funny. Generation.
So funny. Maybe she should change her name to Eleanor. No.
She should.
That's funny. So in 1862, President Young called Eleanor's parents to go to Weber Valley to settle near Morgan. I'm not sure where that is. Maybe you know where that is.
I do know where that is, yeah.
Do you know where that is? Okay, so they were given a plow and some seeds and were to farm. Well, unlike a lot of the other pioneers, Peter, this is Eleanor's father, Peter had lived an easy life. Like, he did not farm. He did not do manual labor. So he had a really hard time trying to farm this land. Also, Eleanor's mother was kind of upset. She was a trained seamstress, but because the pioneers were so destitute, they're like, they had nothing to sow. So they were struggling. And Peter had trouble breaking the ground. The ground was dry and rocky. And before he had plowed an acre, the plowshare broke. It was impossible to just buy or borrow a plow. Like, there just was not anything. So Peter and Mary took the box off the wagon, stored their belongings in it, and asked their little daughter to guard it and drove away. And this is like the part where I'm like, what? This is crazy. Anyways, so they I guess they were like 15 miles from the closest farm. Like they were all alone on this barren land trying to build a home, trying to farm, trying to do whatever. And they had no clue what they were doing. So they rode away, leaving their daughter with all of their belongings and told her to protect it. It says in this biography thing, they were not unkind people. And so it's difficult to understand how they could leave their little 9-year-old Eleanor all alone in a desolate wild country in the mountains in nothing but a wagon box. She went to bed in total darkness alone in the mountains.
That is like so crazy. Because where Morgan is, like, it's still kind of like not a lot of people live there. It's mostly just farmland. Like, thinking about being stranded there, that is so scary.
Yes. Oh my gosh, let's just, this is a part that Eleanor recalled later. Can you just read this little bit about it?
Yeah, I suppose that they did not expect to be gone so long, but I was alone three months. The last two, there was nothing to eat but wild berries and kernels of wheat. There were other settlers 15 miles away, but I was told to guard our possessions and was so frightened that if I thought I heard a wagon on the trail, I hid. Oh my gosh. But even to leave a child one night in such a spot would seem cruel beyond words. I trembled so much with fear and cried so much the first week that I ran out of tears. 3 months alone is how do you even do that as parents?
I don't know.
Oh my God.
And then it said when her parents returned, there was no demonstration of joy at finding her safe. They seemed to take it for granted that God would protect her, which he no doubt did. They had trouble in finding the plow, and on the way back, a bridge was out. There were no good roads at the time. Eleanor does not mention this experience in her autobiography. It must have been too painful for her to talk about. So.
That is so crazy. Wow.
Yeah.
That's super interesting because I feel like most of the time you only hear stories about pioneers that like are rejoicing for protection and things. So that's really interesting that even seemed to notice that she really to have nothing to eat the last 2 months.
Yeah.
That is. Wow. That's so crazy.
Yeah, very crazy. And I feel like as we learn about her in the future, I think that this experience probably really affected her. So eventually, Eleanor found work at the home of Brigham Young, where she met and courted Isaac McKay. And when they were married, Eleanor was only 17 and Isaac was 30.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But well. Isaac was a good guy. Don't worry. So Isaac and Eleanor, they had 11 children with only 5 living past the age of 5 years old. So her child did not end with her childhood.
Wow.
Eleanor, she was emotional and distressed much of her time as a mother, obviously for good reason. Some of her children died in not like one of her daughters, she was standing on a pail by her in her like their farmhouse and got knocked over by a cow and drowned in like the like basin of food for the pigs. Like it was not. And she was pregnant at the time and got on there as fast as she could. But by the time she made it out there, she had died. That was this Ina Isabel. And then this Mary Elizabeth, she was skating and fell and hit her head. And she died as a result of that. Then they had 3 other children that died. Well, two were stillborn that she had later in life. She was almost like 50 years old.
Wow.
Shortly after these two girls died. Well, no, it was this other Ellen Jane that we don't have a picture of. She died in June of 1877. She died from what they think was probably appendicitis. And then that winter, this Mary Elizabeth died. And then there was a son born in 1880. I think it was after this Ina Isabel had died, and he only lived for a few months. And they think that it was her mother was just not in good health when he was born. So she had a lot of trials with her children passing away, not living. Like, it was a very tragic thing. And they actually had to leave that farm where her daughter died because she just couldn't handle being in a place where that happened.
As you would. How would you just...
Seriously.
That is such... I don't understand how she was still, like, a functioning person. Mm-hmm. I don't think that much hardship and still feel like I could... normal life.
Right. Yeah, and from her biography, it says that it was very easy to hurt Eleanor's feelings, so the family was very careful what they said and did. They hated to have her go off into the bedroom to cry. There were many disappointments because mother's feelings were hurt. So she, it sounds like mentally she struggled, which I think is very understandable. She had very traumatic events happen in her life. And I think that in today's world, she probably would have had a little more compassion for those things. But it does say she had a good, kind husband who made life as easy as possible for her, but her health was just not good.
Oh, that is so hard. Wow, that's crazy. I don't understand, too, how people could bring so many children to the world anyway without modern medicine or with just, wow, that's...
Yeah, it does say too that possibly some of the reasons that these children, so many have passed, was because there wasn't a local doctor. Like, they would have had to travel to Ogden to have a doctor. They were in Huntsville. I'm not even sure how far that is away, but
like a pass over the mountain, like 10 minutes away from me. And then actually, if they're traveling to Ogden, they'd probably have to go through the canyon. It would be really to get there. There's like a huge, well, it probably wouldn't have been there, but there's a big reservoir there now. It would have been really to get here.
Yeah. So like, they had a local midwife and that was about it. So yeah. So your second great grandfather, Arwell McKay, he was 13 years old when his father died at the age of 68. So he was the youngest of the children still living. He's this one here. I love their outfits in this picture. It did say that Eleanor, like, she kept a very clean home and she always wanted her family well-dressed. She was very particular about that sort of thing. And you can tell that in this picture of their family.
That makes sense if her mom was a seamstress, you know, that they'd always have nice clothes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here's their home in Ogden on 21st Street when I think they did move there later on once when her husband was getting older. So here's the home that they lived in. Arwell and Jedediah are there with her, with their mother. Then in May 1914, Arwell, so he was, let's see, when was he born? If I can remember, like 1890. I think he was close to 20 here. He wrote a letter to the president of the church saying, and I was able to find this letter, but it was copyrighted, so I wasn't sure if I could share it, but I can send that to you. It's basically a letter that says, on account of mother's ill health, it will be impossible for me to leave on my mission on the 17th of June, but we'll be glad to inform you when I can go. So this was in 1914, and his mother died in June of 1916, and then Arwell left on his mission to Scandinavia in December that same year.
Wow.
And then he returned in November 1919, so almost 3 years, at the age of 26.
Wow. That would be so hard to leave the same year your mom died.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so it sounds like he probably helped take care of her in the years before she passed because he needed to delay his mission to do that.
Wow. Did it say how she died?
Probably somewhere. I would need to look that up. But yeah, I should even look at how old she was when she died. She was, let me just check quick. She was, let's see, about 60, 64?
Mm.
Yeah. So she wasn't very old.
Wow.
So he went on his mission. I thought it was neat. I found his passport application. This was when he was in Denmark. So applying for, I guess, a passport to return to the United States. I just thought it was interesting to see how he filled this all in as his father's name is Isaac McKay, that he's dead. And then it says when they immigrated, he wasn't sure when he became naturalized. And then on the next page, it does say that he desires his passport for use in visiting the countries here in after named for the following purposes: Denmark, Norway, and Sweden, to carry on missionary work. So this was August of 1918. So maybe this was a renewal of his passport because he was in Scandinavia at that time.
Wow.
But then you can see his signature here, Arwell L. McKay. Oh,
that's really cool.
Yeah. And then also on the passport application, it has a picture of him and a description, like a physical description. So he was 25 years at the time. He was 5 feet tall, 6 inches. His forehead, I'm not sure why they describe their forehead, but his forehead was round. Blue eyes, a medium nose. His mouth was medium. His chin was round, his hair brown, complexion fair, and his face full. Mm. I thought that was an interesting description.
Wow.
So when we talked earlier, you had told me a story about Arwell, how he like met his wife in Denmark and you weren't sure if what the story was exactly. And I couldn't really find anything. Like, there's not a written history about him. There is about like your ancestors past him, but there wasn't a written story about him.
Yeah. So well, actually we went to Denmark when my grandpa told the story. So the Copenhagen temple that's there now, it used to be a stake center, and when he was on his mission, it was like his last week of his mission, and he was feeling pretty tired, and so he was closing his eyes and he heard the organ start to play, and the spirit just told him, "That's your wife." So he opened his eyes and saw her and went and introduced himself to her and said, "I'll be back, I'll come back." And went back home and worked on the farm in Huntsville and saved up money until he could go get her and bring her back. And my grandpa said that she learned English, and whenever she was excited, she would start speaking Dutch. And so he said on his mission, he got like a 6-page letter from her that was all in Dutch, and he just folded it up and knew that she was happy for him to be. So that's all I know about it, but I don't know anything about her. I don't know anything else about him until now. So that's really cool.
Yeah. So I don't know exactly how it worked, but so they were married in March of 1920. So he got back from his mission in November of 1919. So they were married in March. And I think there was an immigration, at least date on her page on Family Search, that she came in October of 1919. So that would have been before he got back. So I don't know exactly what the story is for real, but so this is Paula Sorensen was her name, but they were married in March of 1920. And then their oldest child, her name was Geerling, Bessie McKay. She died at the age of 6 from a strep infection, which possibly was from a pulmonary embolism. So like a blood clot blocking the blood flow to her lung. But then they had 2 other children at that time. They had sons aged 3 and 1 when she passed away. And then your great-grandfather was born 1.5 years later after that. So they raised 3 sons who all lived past 70 years old.
Wow.
So they all lived good long lives. And this is Arwell and Betty and the 3 sons. So this is your great-grandfather here, Bryant. Oh. And he was the youngest.
Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah. So I couldn't find too much about their life. Like I said, there wasn't like a written history or anything, but according to census records, he was a farmer, and there was an obituary that said he did some other things. Let me just find that actually. But I thought it was kind of interesting that there wasn't much written about them. So if your family has stuff written, they need to put it in here.
It is really interesting because that other side, my grandma's family, is like so heavily documented, like the recent family. But like with my grandpa, I'm pretty sure he had a brother that maybe passed away recent, like within the last 10 years, that I never met. And I met his mom a But it just like that side of the family, I just don't know a lot and aren't talked a lot of. So it's interesting to at least find out a little bit about them, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here's his obituary. Let me just. Okay. Yeah. So it says that he died after an extended illness. He was 80 years old in a nursing home is where he passed. But he was a farmer. And there we go. He retired from farming in 1960 and then moved to Ogden and had worked at the Defense Depot in Ogden, the Railway Postal Terminal, and Weber State College.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm not sure what he did at Weber State College. It doesn't say, but it does say he was reared and educated in Huntsville and attended the Weber Academy and Utah State University. And he had served on the Huntsville Water Board. So
that's cool.
Yeah. And then we do have a picture of Arwell and Betty on their 50th wedding anniversary in 1970. And then Arwell died. Yeah. Not a nice picture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then Arwell died 4 years later at the age of 80. And then Betty died another 4 years later after that at the age of 82.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, Grace, that is all that I had time to share with you today. I know that was a lot and we kind of sped through it. But what are you feeling right now? What do you think about learning about these ancestors?
It's really cool to know where you come from, you know, like, mm-hmm. and a lot of ties to Denmark that I mean, I knew I came from Denmark, but I didn't really know that it was like they mm-hmm. came, people from Denmark. Right. We're still,
yeah.
really cool, and especially how recent it was. Mm-hmm. So that's cool. It's cool too, just to like, so in our work as foot zoners, we teach a lot about generational things and how mm-hmm. you pass down from generations. Mm-hmm. And so really cool to like hear the things that they had and went through and realize like the connections in my life of like, okay, mm-hmm. like, that's something similar to like, it's just really cool mm-hmm. to hear their lives and all the hard that you, because I think that you don't really think about like, I am here right now because all these people did all these hard things to get here.
Right.
And it's interesting too, that like my family's lived in the Ogden area for most of my life. And like my grandparents lived in Huntsville for a long time. And one of my uncles lives in Morgan right now. So we're like still in the same city that they were in, which is, it's just really powerful to be in the same place your family lived. That's just,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. And you had like, yeah, their whole family stayed in that area for at least those three generations, which is pretty cool. And now for more, because you're fifth generation, I think, yeah. that are in that same area.
That's really cool. Well, it's just cool to hear like about the people that came here, like
mm-hmm.
that they first made the choice to come here and how hard it was. And so cool mm-hmm. to know. I just feel like there's a lot of tradition that's lost because of where we live. There's not a lot of, at least in America, there's just not a lot of traditions and family. And so it's cool to learn where you come from and like mm-hmm. learn their traditions and what they did. And I know some people that still celebrate holidays the way that their families would have when they were in Europe and different places. Mm-hmm. And it's just cool to make those connections, you know, mm-hmm. and try to understand why you are the way you are and why you're here and all the people that made it possible for you to be where you are.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was really neat to learn about your family. And even I'm grateful that whoever wrote that biography about your, I think it was your third great grandmother, Eleanor. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that they included the hard. Cause I think a lot of times when we read memories or stories about our ancestors, there's lots of good and, you know, all the good things that they did or whatever. But I think hearing that they went through hard things and that they struggled with it, I think that's powerful to hear that, because then in our own struggles, we know that, you know, we'll get through it.
Yeah. Well, I feel like we do the same thing today. Like
mm-hmm.
most things are a facade. Social media most of the time is just a highlights of all the good. And so mm-hmm. when we're all in the hard, like, and how powerful it is when someone shares hard things that they're going through mm-hmm. that speak, and just you can relate to that. So it is really cool to hear that like it wasn't all good, because it is most of the time. Like, about the Pioneer, it is the hard stuff, but then it's like how much good came from it. And all the Pioneer movies, it's like all these miracles that happen, but and it also makes you think like, oh man, miracles like that aren't happening now. Well, they weren't happening to every single person back then either. Like, there was a lot of hardship to be had. It is glossed over a lot. So it is cool to hear about the hard things too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, Grace, thank you for letting me learn more about your family and to share that with you. It was a lot of fun. It's really powerful. All these families get a research to hear all the different journeys that they go on. And it was a lot of fun to learn about your McKay family. So with that, can you let us know how we can find you on social media? I know that's kind of where you're.
Yeah.
Where you share most of your stuff.
So my Instagram is grace.anderson and my name is grayce.anderson and it's S-E-N. And then my website is by-grace.com. And all my recipes are there and some of my favorite products, but mostly I'm on Instagram most days. So that's where you can catch up with me. So thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Thank you, Grace. I'll see you later. So because Grace's tree was really, really well researched, I'm sure that she's had grandparents, aunts, and uncles that have researched her family tree for decades. We didn't have a genealogist work on this case, but I did compile information from her family tree to share with her today. So when we have maybe a really full tree and maybe we want to learn about some of the hardships of our ancestors, maybe we wonder what life was like for them, one of the ways to do that is to look at their children. So Grace's third great grandmother, Eleanor, she had 11 children and only 5 of them survived past toddlerhood. And so that was really hard for her. And when we can learn those things about our ancestors, we can look at those hardships. I feel like we can connect better to them because we all have hardships in our own lives, and knowing that they did too and they got through it can strengthen us. So when you look at your family tree and you see your ancestors, see the children that they had, you can look at how long they lived. If you know when they were born and when they passed away, you can just kind of take note of that and think about what that might have been like for your ancestor, how they might have gotten through that. Maybe you can even find out how that child passed away, what that event might have been like for them, and you can strengthen that relationship with your ancestor. So that's my genealogy tip for this week, and thanks so much for listening this week. It really means a lot. Please continue to leave ratings and reviews because that helps to get our podcast seen by more people. Thank you to all of you who entered our giveaway for the last few weeks. That has been chosen, and I'm excited to have Sarah Allred on our podcast and share a bit about her family tree with her. And you may have noticed that last week there was not an episode that came out. Turns out doing a podcast is a lot of work. So I am just releasing an episode every other Tuesday now. So you can watch for another episode in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.